Quartet Ethel, Contemporary Recorder Ensemble Quartet Next Generation, and pianist Angela Hewitt performing Book One of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com. Support for Focus 580 comes from the Infant Parent Institute. With offices in Champaign, the Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infant-parent.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the program today, we'll be talking with Evan Wolfson, someone who is very well known as a longtime leader in the area of civil rights for lesbians and gays. He's the founder of an organization called Freedom to Marry. This is an organization that brings together gay and non-gay people who are interested in working to end discrimination in marriage, and he now serves as Freedom to Marry's executive director. For a number of years, from 1989 until 2001, he worked full-time at Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund. That's the nation's leading lesbian gay legal advocacy group. He was the co-counsel in the landmark Hawaii marriage case, which really helped to launch now what is a national debate on the issue of same-sex marriage. Also, he argued before the Supreme Court. In fact, he was the first Lambda attorney to argue before the U.S. Supreme Court. That was on the Boy Scouts of America case. He has also argued in other kinds of cases involving military service for lesbians and gays and for gay parents who want to adopt children and preserve visitation rights. Right before joining Lambda, he served in Washington, D.C. as associate counsel to Lawrence Walsh in the Office of Independent Counsel. That was the Iran-Contra investigation. And back in 2000, the National Law Journal named him one of the 100 most influential attorneys in America. And in 2004... he was named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine. He's author of a book entitled Why Marriage Matters. That book, which was first published last summer, is now in paperback with a new foreword. The full title is Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry. And it's published by Simon & Schuster. So that is out in the bookstore now. Certainly, if you're interested in looking at the book, you can seek it out. He's here visiting Champaign-Urbana. Gave a talk last night, and I also want to mention that he'll be speaking on the subject marriage, gays, and the importance of progressive engagement as part of the Friday Forum series. And this is something, a noontime lecture series happens on Friday, has been going on for a long, long time now. It takes place at the University YMCA on South Wright down on the campus. These are always free and open to anybody who wants to attend. So, again, people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, you'd like to hear our guest, you can stop by there. And here on this program, questions are welcome, too. All we ask people is just that they try to be brief, and we ask that so that we can keep the program moving along, get in as many different people as possible. But, of course, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Why does marriage matter, and marriage specifically as opposed to some other kind of legally recognized arrangement that would give same-sex couples, confer on them all the same rights and responsibilities that would go with being married? Why is marriage and being able to call it that and say that you are married, why is that important?
Well, gay people want the freedom to marry for the same mix of reasons as non-gay people want it. It's emotional as well as economic. It's practical as well as personal. It's social as well as spiritual. And it matters in love as well as in law. Marriage is the word. Marriage is the term. Marriage is the legal structure we have in our society to give to couples who have made a commitment in life, a legal commitment that brings them and their kids and their loved ones a vast array of tangible and intangible protections and responsibilities that matter across every area of life. Marriage is a statement of who you are in relationship to the primary person you're building your life with, and that statement is immediately understood. When you say, I'm married, people know what you mean. It's not the same if you have to fumble for 15 documents or hire a lawyer or try to talk about a status you've entered into that doesn't even have a verb. Gay people want that statement of love and commitment and dedication and that legal network of responsibility and duty and care and benefits and protections, because it is the system we have in our country to provide these things to families. There is no other system that across every state, line between the federal government and the states, with private businesses, and in personal conversation in life means the same thing. It's not like we have two really great clubs in our country and gays can be offered one while non-gay people can be offered the other. We have one system in our country, and it's called marriage. Mm.
When it comes to marriage and what it is we think marriage is about, I think you argue that we've sort of been here before in terms of arguing about, wrestling about the role of government in marriage, who can marry. And you said, you gave a talk, and I'm sure that you've said this elsewhere, and said something I thought was really interesting, that marriage was the battleground on which we have often wrestled with the idea of what kind of country it is we want to be. And I think you argued that when we had an argument about, does government have any business telling us about, do we have children or do we not? Does government have any business, when it came to the issue of partners of different races, you know, does it have any business saying that people of different races can't get married? And the status of people within the relationship. It's not unprecedented, the kind of argument that we're having now. But I think that's an interesting way of looking at it and connecting it with this much larger kind of discussion about, well, what is America all about? What kind of place do we want it to be?
Well, that's exactly right. Marriage has always been a human rights battlefield on which larger questions, as you just said, of what kind of country we're going to be, have been contested. In the lifetime of many of the people listening to the show right now, we've had at least four major battles and four major changes in the institution of marriage in the United States alone, putting aside what's happened in other countries or other times. We ended, as you just said, government interference in important personal choices about whether or not to have sex without risking a pregnancy. Not so long ago, as part of the legal definition of marriage, that even a married couple could not go down to the pharmacy and purchase contraceptives. The government imposed their view rather than the couple's view on whether they should have kids or not, or how they should live their own intimate lives. Well, that was wrong, and we changed it. We ended government interference in the decision about whether a couple has to remain locked in for life if their marriage has failed or become abusive or violent. And instead, we now allow couples to make their own difficult decision as a family about divorce. We ended, as you said, race restrictions on who could marry whom, restrictions that were defended by the majority, by religion, by politicians as necessary and natural and part of tradition and the way God wants it. And now most people today understand that these restrictions on who's the quote-unquote right or wrong kind of person for you to marry are wrong. And we ended the legal subordination of women in marriage. And again, not so long ago, women who got legally married in this country as part of the traditional definition of marriage actually lost legal rights. They lost their legal identity as a separate person. And that was wrong, and we changed it. All of these changes, all of these battles have taken place on the battlefield of marriage, and they all involve marriage, but they also involve something much bigger. They involved the question of, is America a country where we really do have the proper boundary between the individual and the government, the proper separation between the church and state, the proper relationship and equality of men and women? And so once again, we are on this human rights battlefield talking about how we here in Illinois and we in the country are treating a group of people. And what business does the government have for denying committed couples who are doing the work of marriage in their own personal lives, who are raising kids, who are contributing to the community, what business does the government have denying those couples who've made that personal commitment the equal legal commitment to match the equal legal commitment of marriage?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think a lot of people, though, would say here the big difference between all those other examples and what we're talking about here is that in all those cases, we're talking about heterosexual couples. And here we're talking about same-sex couples. And what we're running up against, the hurdle is people's feelings about homosexuality and the fact that they see this not so much as, yes, we say this is about marriage and preservation of marriage and family and all that kind of stuff. But what it really is, it amounts to, is it's a referendum on homosexuality. And that's the problem that a lot of people have. They're just really really uncomfortable with the idea of same-sex couples.
I think that's a very good point. I think that you're right, that much of what really is being debated here in the language, in the vocabulary, on this battlefield of marriage is really not about marriage. You're absolutely right. It's really about who gay people are, where gay people are, which means this is not a vote or a discussion about how you feel about gays in Massachusetts. This is about how Illinois treats gay people right here, the gay couples who are struggling to provide the best to their kids and build a life together and have the same hopes and dreams and needs as any other couple, including couples right across the street here in Champaign-Urbana. And the more people are able to push past their discomfort and get past the stereotypes and see these couples, these families, these kids being raised by gay parents as real people, real neighbors right here in Illinois, the easier it is for them to take a deep breath and actually embrace fairness. What the opponents of equality here are trying to do is tap into that discomfort, those stereotypes, that in some cases prejudice against gay people, and rush people to judgment by using the hot button language of marriage to try to get people to enact, for example, here in Illinois, a constitutional amendment that would not only deny marriage to those gay families here in the state, but actually would roll back any level of protection, large or small. For example, the Champaign City Council just a couple nights ago enacted a law that would provide a small set of protections, partnership protections, health coverage, and other basic things that American families need for their families. This constitutional amendment, this anti-gay amendment being pushed by the opponents here in Illinois, would actually take even that slice away, let alone the freedom to marry. Mm.
Well, here, and I have a couple of callers I want to get to in a minute, but as far as you're concerned, the bottom line, if you're, and certainly you're making the argument for gay marriage, and other people have, both gay and not, that what's going to have to happen is it's going to have to get to the point where most people are going to be just more relaxed about the idea of homosexuality, and which seems slowly to be happening in the general population. And it also seems to be the case, at least from what I see, is that younger people are a little bit more relaxed than our older people. So you would think that over time, attitudes would change to the point where you would think that at some time in the future that most people would say, yeah, if gay people want to get married, yeah, fine, who cares? You know, the attitude thing, that underlying thing is going to happen before you really can. Or do you think you can actually persuade people about this equity argument, get them to put aside whatever feelings they might have about homosexuality and address the basic fairness kind of issue?
Well, you raise a very good question. I mean, first, and you make a lot of good points. First of all, let's be very clear. Young people overwhelmingly support ending this discrimination. And it's precisely because the right-wing opponents, the anti-gay groups here, don't trust young people to make, in their view, quote-unquote, the right decision, that they're trying to cement discrimination into the Constitution of Illinois and into the federal Constitution to deprive this next generation of being able to shape the society they want. If they believe that they actually had the winning argument, they wouldn't need constitutional amendments to discriminate. But they're trying to keep the young people, you know, here at the University of Illinois and around the country from being able to exercise their voice and their vote in the future. And that's why it's so important that young people get involved in this civil rights struggle now before their power is taken away from them. But in terms of the relationship between public attitudes and ending legal discrimination, it's actually not that one necessarily follows the other. They actually have to happen together. For example, when the first court struck down race discrimination in marriage, it was in 1948, and that court made its ruling in the face of polls showing 90% opposition to interracial marriage. And luckily for all of us, that court did not take a poll and didn't yield to the prejudices of that majority of the time and the passions of the moment. The court did its job. And when the court did that, it actually gave fair-minded people a chance to think it through and begin to open their hearts and minds. So we're going to see an interplay between legal advances where courts and in some cases legislatures, the California legislature just a few weeks ago became the first in the country to vote democratically to end marriage discrimination against gay people. This was another tremendous step forward in this civil rights movement. So we're going to see those kinds of legal advances, but at the same time, we're also going to see good people pushing past their discomfort and really thinking it through again, thinking anew, as Lincoln put it. And so the job for all of us, particularly those of us who are not lawyers, those of us who are not political activists, is to, in our own communities, have conversation with our neighbors to talk about why marriage matters, why ending discrimination matters, how the denial of marriage harms families right here in Illinois, and to give the good, fair-minded, reachable but not yet reached people in the middle the chance to actually think it through in real terms, not just in scary right-wing rhetoric.
Mm. So you think there are people who are adamantly opposed to same-sex marriage who probably won't change their minds. There's a group of people who think that it's fine, and so you have those two groups that they have made up their mind one way or another, but there is a middle group that just aren't really sure that you think could be persuaded mm-hmm. in the direction you would like to see them go, could be persuaded that in fact that it's not a threat, that there's no particularly good reason not to allow same-sex marriage.
Oh, I absolutely think that. And for example, I wrote my book, Why Marriage Matters, precisely to talk with those people, the people I think of as the reachable but not yet reached. And I think that the way we have to talk with those people is not by treating them as bigots or ignorant or terrible people, but in fact, these are good people who are uncomfortable. You used a really good word. They're uncomfortable with this. They're not haters, but they have questions. They have concerns. They may not even really want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And we need to encourage them to push past that discomfort and ask their questions. And Why Marriage Matters is written in a series of chapters, each one of which is a question that I believe these people are really asking and that they deserve good answers to, like, how will this affect children? Is this a matter of religion? Or how does religion relate to this question of civil rights? Is this a question of civil rights? What will be the consequences to society? These are good questions, and we have good answers, and we ought to talk with people about them.
Yeah. Our guest this morning, Evan Wolfson, he's an attorney. He has a long-time leader in the area of civil rights for lesbians and gays. He was for a number of years, he worked at the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, which is the nation's leading lesbian gay legal advocacy group. He is also the founder and now serves as executive director of an organization called Freedom to Marry. He is here visiting in our area. We'll give a talk today at noon at the Friday Forum at the University of Y. So if you're in and around Champaign-Urbana, you can go and hear more from him. And here on the program, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. First up is a caller in Indiana. This is line number 4, the toll free line.
Hello.
Yes.
First, an anecdotal comment, and second, a question. I'm retired, and I just discovered in the last 2 years that I had an uncle that was gay, and I interacted with him for, you know, almost 50 years, and I did not know that, and I since discovered, talking to my aunt, and my mother's now is deceased, and talking to them, that he was introduced to, he was one of the younger children, and was introduced to the family in the sense that he was different, and that we had to make allowances for it. And first they assumed that it had to do with his illness he had as an early child. It turned out to not to be that, that he was gay. And within the family structure, you know, I would have never guessed it in a million years. And I'm basically a liberal person, so in a sense, the homosexuality is not a big deal thing for me, except, you know, for the problems it causes to those people. And I just thought that there certainly must be other people like me out there who have had a family member who, in a sense, was, you know, in terms of, you know, was just a general person, except that they were gay. And, of course, there were certain things that he couldn't do, like, you know, marry and things like that, and in terms of having a long partner. Second, the question is this, and I've gone so far as to turn on the right-wing evangelist on TV, but I've never found out exactly what it is when they say that marriage will go to hell if we allow gays to marry. Is there any, do you meet this in the courtroom? I mean, what do they say? And if they do say things, how is that counteracted in terms of data and stuff like that? That has always bothered me. Whenever I've asked somebody that is pretty far on the right and is a Christian, they just seem to blow up, and you really can't, you know, even pin them down in any sense whatsoever. But what concerns them, you know, it's just usually it comes down. It's the way God believes it, and that's the way it ought to be. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, you can respond to any of that anyway.
Well, actually, I think the caller makes several good points. First of all, in the story about your uncle, I think that illustrates that it's really important, first of all, for those of us who are gay to actually speak out and to tell our stories to our neighbors, to our friends, to our family, to those who love us. We can't just assume that just because people are generally good people or generally pro-gay or generally accepting or even because they love us, like our mother and father, that they necessarily understand how the denial of marriage, how the second-class citizenship that gay people in Illinois currently endure actually affects us. And so it's important for us to speak out. If we don't tell our stories, if we don't tell why this matters to us and ask the people in our lives to care about this and start there, how can we expect them to be fair and to know, as you say, to know the things that you might have known? Had you known, you might have even been more active and taken more of a role in speaking out, although it sounds like you are somebody who really does appreciate the importance of fairness and adding your voice, and it's great that you made the call. And on the second point you made about the gloom and doom that we always hear from the opponents of equality, you're exactly right. Time and time again in American history, at every civil rights moment, such as the one we have now, we have heard from the opponents of equality that if we make this change, if we allow African Americans equality, if we welcome immigrants to our shore, if we treat women equally and end the subordination that they have, if we allow gay people to participate in the institutions of society, the sky is going to fall. And of course, it's been proven untrue again and again and again. What happens is actually we have a stronger, better country because more people are able to share in its blessings and contribute. And the proof of it is, I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. All you have to do is look at places like Canada, like Massachusetts, where thousands of same-sex couples have gotten legally married. They have not used up all the marriage licenses. Massachusetts has the lowest divorce rate in the country. The kids in Massachusetts are doing great. This is not a bad thing. This is a good thing. This actually strengthens families. And when people are opposing this, what we need to do is turn back to them and say, how exactly is this going to hurt your marriage? Why does it hurt your marriage when the couple across the street is able to be a little stronger in their commitment?
How many states now allow in how many states now is gay marriage legal?
Only one state currently allows gay people to marry, just Massachusetts. Somebody had to go first, and Massachusetts was the one, but other states are going to follow soon. And meanwhile, there has been momentum in several states in the direction of marriage equality. So we now have the nation's largest state, California, providing essentially all but marriage through a partnership law. We have Connecticut this year enacting a civil union law, again, a form of gay marriage, not marriage itself yet, but gay marriage, a separate marital status for gay people. And Connecticut, of course, joined Vermont in doing that. Other states, such as New Jersey and Hawaii, have enacted much lesser, smaller measures of protection that provide some of the benefits and protections, but by no means all.
Well, and what possibility is, do you think that there are states that at some point are going to actually outlawed and to the maybe perhaps to the point of going where they will change their constitutions to define marriage as a relationship between a man and a woman that would essentially legally preclude.
Oh, there's a ferocious right-wing campaign underway right now, as there has been for several years, to try to pressure states into deepening the discrimination against gay people. There's a group right here in Illinois trying to push for a constitutional amendment to cement that discrimination into the state constitution. And several states have actually enacted anti-gay constitutional amendments to deny marriage, partnership, civil union, and any other measure of protection, large or small. It's part of this campaign. But this is, again, the classic American pattern of civil rights advance. As I say in Why Marriage Matters, it can be summed up in one word, patchwork. We see during these patchwork periods, some states move toward equality faster, while others resist and even regress. You know, last year, 2004, the voters of Alabama were asked to vote on a measure to remove from their state constitution language prohibiting African Americans from using public accommodations, restaurants, theaters, and so on equal terms. Now, obviously, that was no longer enforceable language because of the Civil Rights Act and the advances we made in this country in the 50s and 60s, but it was still in the Constitution, and the voters of Alabama failed to remove it last year. They voted still to keep that language in, even though it was unenforceable. It's sometimes very hard to change these things without some states taking the lead and without the nation as a whole having this kind of civil rights conversation. Hopefully, Illinois will be one of the states that will move in the direction of fairness first rather than wait in the bottom half to be brought along.
Well, let's take another caller. This is Bloomington, Indiana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. You say we should look at the consequences of gay marriage. A major argument against homosexual marriage is that it destroys the definition of marriage. It destroys the definition of marriage to the point that there will be no boundaries for marriage. If homosexuals can marry, why can't siblings marry? Why can't polygamists marry? Homosexuals have denied that homosexual marriage would open the door to polygamy. It would never happen, they said. Well, it already happened. Some polygamists in Utah are pushing for legalized polygamy. And in a well-publicized case in the Netherlands, a man has married two women. They said it wouldn't happen, but it happened, and promptly.
Well, actually, gay people are not saying, let's change the definition of marriage. What these couples are saying is, let us into marriage. We want to have marriage with the same rules, the same responsibilities, and the same respect as other committed couples. We're not saying, let's have no rules. We're saying, let's have what you have, just as you have the right to marry one person whom you love, the person who's precious to you, the person you want to make a commitment to and build a family with, so do we.
Yeah, but the point is...
Well, no, I understand your point. And what I'm saying is that when people bring up this parade of horribles and polygamy and all that kind of stuff, what it shows is they actually don't have a reason for the question that's on the table, which is, why should these committed couples be denied the same freedom to marry with the same rules as other couples?
You can try to change the definition of marriage.
Well, but I understand you're repeating that phrase, but actually that's not the definition of marriage is not who can't get into it. The definition of marriage is a loving and committed union between two people reinforced by law who undertake particular legal obligations to one another and to their dependents who have legal protections and responsibilities that flow to them because of being married. And there's nothing about gay people getting married that's going to change that definition of marriage for anyone else.
That's not the definition of marriage. The definition of marriage as present in my Webster's Collegiate Dictionary is the union of one man to one woman.
Well, no, actually, quite clearly, that's not what the dictionary says. But even if it is what the dictionary...
I can read it to you.
Well, I'm assuming maybe you just did, but it's obviously not accurate because in Massachusetts, in Canada, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in Spain, Roman Catholic Spain, the definition of marriage under the law is this loving and committed union, and what they've done is remove a restriction for which there is no good reason.
No, but what they did, they changed the definition of marriage.
I understand.
They wouldn't, but they did.
Yeah, I understand that you keep saying that, but what I'm saying to you is what they did was remove a restriction from who could enter into that same system of legal obligation and respect. And there's nothing about allowing more couples to participate in the institution that takes anything away from anyone else.
Yeah, it certainly does. They said... polygamy would never result in polygamy. It already has.
Well, again, you've asserted that several times, but I actually you talk about a celebrated case in the Netherlands. I actually have no idea what you're talking about. Canada has not had polygamous marriages. Massachusetts has not had polygamous marriages. And you know what? When we ended race restrictions on who could marry whom, people on your side, the opponents of equality, made exactly the same claim. One court said if we allow interracial couples to marry, they said, quote, the Turk with all his harem will take up residence at our gates. And another court predicted that if we allow interracial couples to marry, it will produce, quote, a race of children that are sickly and effeminate. Opponents of equality throughout history have always tried to scare people by changing the subject and pointing to something else, but what they are unable to do, as you have not yet done, is point to a single reason why these couples, not some other configuration down the road, but these couples right here in Illinois should be denied the legal commitment of marriage.
Well, I can tell you a very dire result that has already happened in Massachusetts. Children in Massachusetts public schools are being taught that homosexual marriage is just is normal, and some of the people who don't want their children taught that have gone to school and have said, we don't want our children taught that, and the schools have said, you don't have a choice. One man went to the principal of the school's office, went to the principal's office, demanded that they at least inform him before they teach his before they teach his child that homosexual marriage was normal. They would not even inform him, and when he persisted, they had him arrested.
Well, I sincerely doubt they had him arrested. I don't know what you're talking about. What I do know is you're taking the talking points off of the Focus on the Family website and you're repeating them.
Let me address
the concern I think that you're raising, and that is that I think most parents in our country do not want their children taught that it's okay to look down on others who are different. I think most parents in this country want all of our children taught that we live in a free country where there are many different people, and we must understand difference, and we must respect it, while at the same time remaining true in our own lives to our own values. This country will never be able to say to any church or synagogue or temple or mosque that it cannot teach precisely whatever it wants about values, about beliefs, about doctrine, about ideology. That is part of American freedom, and I very much respect it. But no church, no synagogue, no temple, no mosque ought to be allowed to impose its one set of views on every other American through the weaponry of the government. And what we're talking about here is who can enter into the legal institution of marriage. Government should not be discriminating when it comes to legal institutions.
I need to jump in, and I hope the caller will forgive me, but I have another caller here, and we're entering into about our last 15, 20 minutes on the program, and I have somebody else who is waiting, and I want to invite some other people in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Again, perhaps I should also again introduce our guest, Evan Wolfson. He's an attorney who's been involved in working on civil rights issues for gays and lesbians for quite a long time. He worked at the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, which is the nation's leading lesbian gay advocacy group, and is also the founder of an organization called Freedom to Marry. He is, in addition, author of the book Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry, which was first published last summer by Simon & Schuster and now is available in a paperback edition, came out this summer, also published by Simon & Schuster. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. A caller here in Ottawa on our line number 2. Hello.
Yes, it strikes me as odd that the history of marriages had nothing to do with government. And now, since government in the last, 200 years has become so large, everyone seems to be searching for benefits, health insurance or the right to adopt, things like that. Question I have, why in the world should marriage be legal? I mean, in terms of government, why can't marriage just be a religious right? And if we're going to have an equal society, the previous caller talked about polygamy and incest and everything else under the sun. I don't care what other people do. I don't care what you do. But why, as a matter of law, should I care that you're gay and you want to be with another man? I don't care. But if you can find a church that wants to marry you, that's fine, because your life means, you're the next guy next door. I don't care. As a matter of law, I'm asking you that as a single individual who resents married people getting benefits that single people don't get.
Well, you raise a lot of interesting issues. The first thing I want to do, though, is correct a little bit of history, which is you said that marriage was always religious and then government got into the act when it got big. It's actually kind of the opposite way around. That actually, marriage was, under most societies, including, for example, Roman law, which is where much of our law originally comes from, actually was a legal institution. It was part of the state, and religion actually came into it much later. For example, for the first 1,000 years, the Catholic Church had nothing to do with marriage. Marriage only became a sacrament in the Catholic Church after the first millennium, and it later got into the act and took it on as a sacrament, and of course that's their perfect right to have their views and their beliefs as a matter of their own religion. But what's important to understand, and you actually alluded to this, is that what we're talking about here is not religious rites, R-I-T-E-S, of marriage, which are properly up to each church and faith to decide for themselves. What we're talking about here is the legal right, R-I-G-H-T, to marry, which is regulated by the government. And now you ask the question, why does government regulate marriage? Why is marriage a legal institution? And the answer to that is that what government is acknowledging is that for most people in our society, forming a bond, finding companionship, building a life together, taking on a legal commitment, undertaking certain responsibilities is a good thing and something humans and Americans aspire to, gay as well as non-gay. And because of the constellation of interests and needs that then emerge in that bond and the way in which the family functions as a unit, their need to pool resources, to be there for one another, to have a safety net, to care for one another, to have responsibilities, to have the lines clear in the event of a breakup or an emergency or some other life crisis, that's why government regulates marriage. And I understand that people like you might think that's not something government should do, and you know, obviously you're free to advocate that. But I think most Americans, gay as well as non-gay, actually see some value in the government respecting and acknowledging these basic, important human relationships. But government should not be doing it discriminatorily.
I have another question. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to your use of the English language, and you seem to define everyone who isn't gay as non-gay rather than straight or heterosexual. And you seem to, the affirmative model is the gay model in your verbiage. And I would just like you to comment on that. Because I'm not non-gay. I'm not anti-gay. I happen to be straight, and I guess since the word police are out there on the left and on the right or the center or wherever, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't think I commented on your use of words at all. You're certainly
no,
free.
No, I commented on your
right
that you say non-gay and anti-gay, and you define the heterosexual world in terms of gayness, okay? Non-gay and anti-gay.
Actually, I think it is good, actually, for the majority sometimes to think about how the world looks like and feels like from the perspective of the minority, because I think it actually helps all of us to understand how we might feel if we were being treated in the same way that other people are being treated. So that's how I use the word. But it's certainly, there's nothing negative about it. My parents are non-gay. My friends are non-gay. My brothers and sisters, you know, my brothers are non-gay. So my niece and nephews are non-gay. It's not intended to be any kind of dismissive or bad term. It's simply a way of talking about this that, I guess, as you just point out, does invite people to think through what would it feel like if I were being discriminated against in the same way.
We just, again, I hope the caller forgive me. I want to jump in here because the lines are full and I want to get some other people in. We only have about 10 minutes, but just real quick. If it is possible to do it quick, I think that the caller raises this question of apart from straight people marrying and gay people marrying, why should we privilege these two individuals because they have formed this bond and give them some kind of, and essentially respond to this, but give them rights and privileges that single individuals don't get?
Well, I mean, that's one way to say it, but actually it's really not exactly right. What we're acknowledging is that here is an important relationship between two people that is central to their building a life, to their need to exchange resources between each other, pool resources, own property together, do all kinds of economic things together. And the law is simply reflecting that fact, just as you acknowledge the business relationship that people might have in another context, just as we acknowledge the parent-child relationship and the dependency and the flow of obligations and support that goes between those people. It's not really privileging the person as such. It's acknowledging the relationship and respecting it. Having said that, of course, most of us do feel that actually, in general, this is a good relationship. It does actually help people generally, not in every case, but generally have healthier, more productive, more nourished, more fulfilling lives, and it does help strengthen the community and society, and therefore it makes sense for government to actually take note of the relationship and support it, although again, not in a way that discriminates.
All right, let's take a call from someone in Chicago, line 4. Hello.
Yes, hello. I have a problem with your analysis in the sense that it gets away from what the primary purpose of marriage has traditionally been, which is the procreation and nurturing of children, and this has always been the traditional primary purpose of marriage. And when you get into these other forms of so-called marriage, whether polygamous or homosexual, I think you're really getting away from the primary purpose of marriage. And I think in that sense, you harm society and you harm the institution. And I think that's the main problem with what you're proposing.
Well, I think the main problem with what you're saying is that it's just actually not true. It's not true in the United States that we actually have some kind of procreation requirement or test for married couples. I mean, look at couples like Bob and Elizabeth Dole or Pat and Shelley Buchanan or even George and Martha Washington. These are couples who married for the mix of reasons that people marry. Sometimes it's because people want to have children and raise their children within marriage, but very often it's not. Very often it's because of desires for companionship and support and to make a commitment to another person and build a life with that person. And gay people have that same mix of reasons as non-gay people. No state issues a marriage license with a sunset provision where people have 2 years to cough up a child or lose their license. And so why would we all of a sudden invent this procreation requirement when it comes to to gay people?
Well, I think you
let me just finish one other point and then I'll come back to you. And that is that, on the other hand, going to your point about nurturing kids, if you care about kids, which I take it you do, and certainly I do, and I think most of us do, why would we want to punish the children who are being raised by gay parents here in Illinois by denying them the protections and safety net that marriage brings to their families? Gay couples are having kids. Gay parents care about their kids. They want the best for their kids. So if you really care about kids, not just some abstract theory about the historical purpose of marriage, but if you really care about real kids here in Illinois, why are you denying those kids the protections and safety net that comes to that family through marriage?
Well, get back to your original point. When you talk about some exceptions, there are always exceptions to a general rule, but the general purpose has always been the procreation of children
and to provide
an environment for procreating and nurturing children. And you can get into exceptions on anything, but when you actually establish an institution of marriage and then you come into recognizing deviant forms of marriage, then I think you're talking about breaking that general pattern. And you can find exceptions to any rule. But as a general point, marriage has always been an institution to provide for the procreation and nurturing of children, and it's not just in this country, but it's traditional, it's historical.
Well, but again,
it causes religions culture, whatever you want to call it.
Right, I think we have your point, but actually, you know, you keep repeating the phrase general, et cetera, but it's just simply not true. Marriage has been an institution that has evolved constantly over time. Most Americans would not recognize the so-called historical or traditional or general concept of marriage in which the father, for example, was the dominator of the household and actually had the right to put his own children to death at any point, where people were not entitled to become full citizens until they married, where women were the legal property of their husbands. These are all part of the traditional pattern of marriage, which, by the way, did not have as its primary purpose procreation, and certainly not the nurturing of children, but was primarily an economic unit that was formed for providing people, particularly in a pre-industrial era, the opportunity to have, for example, the fisherman would have the fish wife who would take his goods to market. And they formed an economic unit very different from the way we think of marriage as today. But I also have to point out, you actually didn't respond at all to what I think is the more important point here, which is that when it comes to the nurturing of children and the well-being of children, it actually makes no sense to deny the kids being raised by gay parents right here in Illinois the safety net that comes with marriage. And this is not just some philosophical or historical debate between people like you and me. This is about real kids and real couples here in Illinois, and your position would leave those kids without a safety net. It actually makes their lives harder rather than easier.
All right, let's go to another caller. This is Urbana, line one. Hello.
You're being very eloquent, and I really appreciate hearing this discussion. Listening to the previous caller, I was thinking, my golly, I'm beyond my childbearing years. I'm not raising children anymore. Does that mean I have to get unmarried?
Mm-hmm.
Am I not protected by marriage anymore? For me and for many people, the legal status of marriage says, for instance, that if my husband dies, I can't be thrown out of the house that we own together. And other protections that define the fact that we have created an economic unit together, and it, you know, encompasses emotional commitments, but it also, you know, protects economic interests. It's far from the exception that people who don't have children marry. My mother has married was widowed twice. Now she's been widowed three times, but she married twice after my father died and did not have children in those marriages. And I think it's great that she was able to do that. And she and her spouse were protected by legal definitions of the rights of a spouse. And so, for instance, when my when we were talking about wills for my mother and my stepdad, it was spelled out that he had the, if one of them died before the other had the surviving spouse had the right to stay in the house, even though I and my brother will inherit it eventually. So those kinds of things are all involved. And I was, I have to laugh when somebody pulls out the Merriam-Webster dictionary. I just pulled out my dictionary, which is the Random House Dictionary of English Language, unabridged second edition, and it says, among other things, it includes that it could be a man and a wife, but it says, a relationship in which two people have pledged themselves to each other in the manner of a husband and wife without legal sanction, it could be as in trial marriage or homosexual marriage. In this case, it was written before there could be any legal marriages. But, it, you know, language evolves, definitions evolve, and dictionary definitions are not the law, nor and we should not we shouldn't listen to that sort of stuff. Thanks very much. I really appreciate hearing you talk. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Should we just go on and see if we can get at least one more person, and we'll go to a caller in Springfield. This is line 3.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Yes.
I appreciate the fact that you're engaging in conversation with your callers without being combative. And I also wanted to say that I am not against homosexuals, but I am not for homosexual behavior. And I do have a cousin who's a homosexual, and I love him dearly. I've known people who are homosexuals, and I love them. But I just want to comment that I feel that we have been indoctrinated for the last 30 years about this by a small group of people who want to call it a right. Now, I am a born-again Christian, and I believe a lot of people say that Jesus blesses a homosexual relationship. Actually, Jesus only blesses a heterosexual marriage, and he doesn't even bless a man and woman who are living together outside of marriage. So I just don't want to, like, pick on homosexuals, okay? Any type of sexual relationship outside of marriage would be wrong, okay? But you were talking about different kinds of love. You know, if you love someone, you should be able to marry them. But, you know, there's all kinds of people in your life who you love, but you don't marry them necessarily. Marriage is exclusively between a man and a woman, and it should be between a man and a woman because just the way we're designed, you know, there's boundaries, there's natural laws. Our bodies were designed. You're born a man, I'm born a woman. Man and woman are created for each other. A man was not created for a man. Look at all the things that have happened with disease.
Well, before you go down that path, let me take you at the loving point that you've said you have. I'm not here to argue your religion with you. I think you're perfectly entitled to believe whatever you want to believe. That's part of the great things about being an American. We all have the right to believe what we want to believe, and we respect one another's beliefs. But what we don't do as Americans is use the government as a weapon to take sides in different religious beliefs. As I'm sure you know, many people in this country do not agree with what you just said. Many people have a very different religious view of the values at stake here.
But also opposition is not hate either, is it?
Excuse me, I didn't interrupt you. So let me just finish responding to what you said. Many people in this country have very different religious ideas from yours. And just as you would not want them to impose theirs on you in your life or in your house of worship, so you and others should not impose yours on them through the law. What we're talking about here is who enters into a legal institution. And that legal institution embodies moral, not religious, but moral values of love and commitment and dedication and fairness and equality and treating others as you would like to be treated and not putting obstacles in the path of people trying to care for one another. Those are values that I would hope your religion teaches. They certainly are values that other religions teach. And it's important that in America, we understand that we do not use the government to dictate one religious view on everyone else.
Okay, can I ask you this question, though?
Sure.
Say it does become law. Once something becomes law of the land, we're supposed to abide by it. Now, you know that a lot of churches, they oppose this. at some point in time, you know, everybody says mind your own business, keep it in the church. But at some point in time then, is it going to become when a pastor is preaching from the pulpit, say, speaking out of Romans, out of Corinthians, is that going to be illegal, free speech? Are they going to consider that hate speech?
That is a great question, and I'm really glad you asked it. In the United States, we have a very strong First Amendment in the Constitution that protects not only personal freedom and speech, but religious freedom and speech. The government can never tell any religion what it can say or do in its own house of worship. And I would be the first one to stand with you to defend that. Government has no business telling any church who it must marry. But no church should be able to tell the government who gets a legal marriage license. And let me give you an example of how that works. A Jewish couple cannot go down to your church, bang on the door, even armed with the civil rights law that already exists, and demand to be married in your church. They can't do it. It is not allowed under our system. But the priest or the minister in your church should not be able to pick up the phone and call over to City Hall and say, hey, that Jewish couple doesn't believe in Jesus, or they don't agree with my religion, so don't give them a legal marriage license. And that's the difference. That's the separation of church and state in America that protects not only our personal freedom, but also our religious freedom. And you ought to defend it just as I promise you I would.
I must, again, apologize to the caller for jumping in, because at this point we have used our time. I am sure it's an issue we will talk about again, but for the moment, we're going to have to stop. Two things let me mention. First of all, our guest, Evan Wolfson, will be talking on the U of I campus as part of the Friday Forum series, speaking on the subject marriage, gays, and the importance of progressive engagement. This is part of an overall series of talks that happen noon times on Friday this fall, the overall theme, Conscience in Action. It's open to anybody who is interested in attending, and this is at the University of Y at 1001 South Wright Street in the heart of the campus. So in and around Champaign-Urbana, you can hear him. Also, his book is titled Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry. It's now available in a paperback. First came out last year and in paper this year. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Our guest, Evan Wolfson, is the executive director of the organization Freedom to Marry. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
The broadcast today made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign. Locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925, Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. The broadcast is also made possible by the U of I Center for Advanced Study, whose 15th annual CAS lecture presents Journalism and the Underclass by CAS Professor of Journalism Leon Dash on Tuesday, October 11th, 7:30 p.m. in the Tryon Festival Theater in the Cranert Center for the Performing Arts. For more information, you go to their website. That's www.cas.uiuc.edu. And the next part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about education reform, certainly something we have talked about before many times on this show. And we'll be talking with someone who is somewhat of a controversial figure. His name is Chris Whittle. He is the founder of the Edison Schools. This is the nation's largest for-profit manager of public schools. And he has a new book out that he has entitled Crash Course that lays out some of his ideas for education reform. We'll talk about that in the next part of the show. First, we'll break for news and update on the market, so please stay tuned.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the markets.